You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today is Thanksgiving in the United States. I'm recording this a few days before. I'm your host, Matthew Raphael Johnson. And I wish all who celebrate in the U.S. a happy Thanksgiving. Despite its connection with Abraham Lincoln, it is still a worthwhile day. Now, some of you may remember, I don't remember, 3 or 4 years ago, when Sven was here, we did a Thanksgiving episode. And given what we're all about, we attempted to refute and even make fun of the official leftist narrative as to what happened. The regime cannot have holidays that have any European origin unless they're strictly, foreign or pagan or something like that. Any holiday, any institution that they can't control that comes from a very different era. They've taken aim at every possible holiday. Thanksgiving is one of them. And the foil that they use, and you know what I'm going to say, that somehow the United States was conquered, that whites are so incorrigibly wicked that anywhere they might go, for any reason, damage, destruction, and hatred follow. It's only been relatively recent that conquest was considered a bad thing. It was a claim to not just greatness, but political rule in the past. All the great empires, the biblical era, the Old Testament, Persian, Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians, the Israelites themselves, the Chinese celebrating their conquerors. And to be honest, it was no different for the American Indian. American Indians are of themselves quite harmless, but in the hands of the regime, this very Judaic and violently anti-Christian system that we're forced to live under, they become quite, the ideology becomes quite dangerous. So many, many years ago, many centuries ago, conquest was a ticket to political legitimacy. Now the American Indian was no different in this respect. The Creek conquered the land that at least, at some level belonged to the Choctaws and Chickasaws, Comanches, defeated the Apaches. And I don't have to say anything about the Aztecs or the Mayans, because theirs was a slave system. The Carib tribes fought over land all the time. Aztec Empire was particularly colonial because Spain defeated them. It's always been very strange how a handful of guys coming off a ship can defeat an empire. The most that they were able to muster at the time was about 1,000 Spanish soldiers. The overwhelming majority of their infantry came from the Indian tribes, native tribes that are scattered, hunter-gatherer types. The Aztecs were a step above that, and were used in sacrificial and economic ways. They were exploited, in other words. One of the long-standing myths of the system is that maybe not the empires of Central America, but for the American Indians on the North American continent, lived this idyllic life. It's kind of hard to defend that with the Aztecs, etc. But even today, the notion of conquest is something celebrated depending on who's doing the conquering and who's being conquered. Anything connected with World War II is automatically seen as positive, and no one mentions, remembers, except for people like us, that the Soviet Union conquered Central and Eastern Europe. You know, the long and short of it is to claim that white Europeans acted as thieves, taking the land by force, is just one of the examples of amateur history where today's standards are read back centuries earlier. The regime functions through public ignorance, public fear, and white self-hatred. A few people have noticed over the last few years, the number of those claiming to be American Indians has skyrocketed, which is something that really begs for an explanation. And one of the explanations is that white people want to avoid being called white. They want the benefits that go along with being a non-white. And we've had professors who claim to be an Indian of one type or another and get tenure. And then when they're found out, they get rejected. So they're fully admitting that the only reason she was promoted was because of that. The thesis that Europeans, and actually a very small number of Europeans, stole the country is, you know, very much like so many of the special pleading of the system, that the Indian was completely indolent, completely ignorant, and so easily duped, almost like they lived in an Edenic way of life where any guile would be immediately rewarded. And of course, that's anything but the case. The tribes fought very hard to preserve their lands, although many of those lands have themselves been conquered. It's all told, by 1900, there were about 40 wars involving white Americans on the one side and Indians on the other. Starting in 1789, you had about 20,000 dead whites as a result, and maybe 30,000 dead Indians. In books like Scalp Dance and many others, we know that the list of atrocities against white settlers was substantial. Indians were extremely primitive. The country was very lightly settled. And the very fact that there were, not just the empires in the South, but the Indian tribes themselves, despite their bravery, were conquered so consistently. The Pontiac's War in 1764, the Delaware warriors attacked schoolhouses. The use of scalping, children taken prisoner. A claim that we are familiar with is disease. Now, besides the fact that there's no moral condemnation with that, and I think specifically they talk about smallpox, that it didn't exist in North America, but it existed in Europe, hence Europeans inadvertently infected a group of people who had no natural immunity. What people fail to note is that life expectancy was fairly low amongst the Indians. Malnutrition was fairly high, and they were struggling with diseases long before any European showed up. Indians who had been exposed long before the whites got here brought disease wherever they visited. And just like the Pilgrims, certain British explorers found many abandoned villages and population, which at the time were considered to have been substantially reduced. Now, to be sympathetic to the American Indian who, you know, did not cause settlement. Settlement was something also that the settlers didn't think they had much control over. But seeing what looked to them to be an unsettled, very sparsely populated land was natural development from what was happening in Britain. Not that I am religiously sympathetic with the Puritan movement. But there's nothing unique about the migration of Europeans to the New World. Everywhere you go, invasions of varying levels of cruelty, occupations, population transfers, has been the rule rather than the exception. And the Indian tribes are not exceptions whatsoever. I think it's going too far to call them a Stone Age society, but they were hunter-gatherer, very, very primitive. Of course, the regime doesn't care about the Indians, so-called Native Americans. The descent for so many of them is open to question. But the point is to foster guilt, uncertainty, self-hatred amongst younger white people. Of course, so much of this is mythology. The population density in America was extremely low. It's not like what you had in Latin America with the Indian empires, Aztecs and Incas. Of course, there was no intent to bring disease here. Many have forgotten that syphilis has its origin in North America. It's interesting to note that the Wampanoags, the native tribe who went to the first Thanksgiving, really had forgotten their language. Yes, there were Bibles in their native language, but they had simply forgotten it. And it really was 1993 that they began to relearn it. There's a number of myths. Many of you are aware of what they are. The concept of living in peace and harmony is one of the more irritating ones, because it treats white people as some sort of an infection, literally and figuratively. I also don't want to say that the native tribes were particularly traditionalist. War, slavery, even cannibalism, all kinds of sexual immorality were common practices. Human sacrifice, infanticide, was an integral part of the Aztec Empire. Many of you know I'm a big fan of Apocalypto, Mel Gibson's movie, which is filmed from the point of view of as a subject tribe from what appear to be the Aztecs. But it really could be anybody. They saw barbarism and sought to take advantage of their innocence, or what they thought was innocence, or simplicity is probably a better word to convert them. And many suffered martyrdom. Another myth concerns, of course, Christopher Columbus as bringing slavery to the New World, despite the fact that slavery was fairly well known in North America. In fact, it was widely practiced. Now, Columbus made it clear that he demanded fair treatment of anyone who he came across. And he said when he first came across them, on San Salvador, Columbus writes, "I recognize that they were people who would be better freed, that is to say, freed from error, and converted to the holy faith by love rather than force." Of course, American slavery didn't commence until long after Columbus died. It's easy for some idiot to say that Columbus was responsible for genocide, wiping out millions of people. But this wasn't a systematic extermination. Many Indians died after contact with Europeans. But to think that there was any kind of agenda here, unlike the ones that are unleashed against whites today, Columbus was, and many of the explorers were concerned with the native populations, possibly even overestimating them. But the Spanish were not the first conquerors in the area. This whole concept of anti-imperialism, you know, equality, fair treatment, this comes from Europe. This comes from European philosophy and did not exist in the New World. Putting yourselves in the shoes of those who are newly arrived, who were the hunted when they got here. Of course, they took action against their tormentors later. Many of you, I like Sam Dixon. His work is excellent. And he did a review of a book called Mayflower, A Story of Courage, Community, and War. And that's by Nathaniel Philbrick. And that book has a lot to recommend it. The Puritans came to rest in a very rough area. Farmland was of very poor quality, even for New England. They had unterraced hills. And, of course, it was the Indians. It was people like Squanto, which is actually a true story, knew how to bank the soil around and lace it with fish, etc., so that crops would grow even in the very thin topsoil that quickly eroded away. It is true the pilgrims did invite Indians to their Thanksgiving feast. Many, many cultures around the world have some variation of Thanksgiving, especially around harvest time. The Puritans saw themselves as global revolutionaries. Their intention was to socially uplift the Indians around them. When warfare broke out, their leaders in the old world said that they have to be converted, not destroyed. Even blaming in Britain, blaming the Puritans for their failure to convert and hence for the state of war that came to exist. They saw it as a civilizing mission. Many of you know what the phrase a praying Indian is. These are new converts who were granted access to European civilization. They remained loyal to the king in King Philip's War. Many of them betrayed their own people because they saw the European mind as more humane than their own. But even praying Indians was a subject for debate. You did have colonists saying that these people should be eliminated, they're subhuman. But the majority sought basic fair treatment. And because of this division, not to mention the small numbers of settlers, their organized response was often very poor. It didn't take long for the original Puritan colonies to deal with a full Indian reservation. The pro-Indian colonists would attack others who wanted to see the Indians completely destroyed. So by the first Thanksgiving, you had something like 45 to 55 pilgrims. I mean, King Massasoit brought 90 male braves with him. Chief Massasoit sees this, 45 pilgrims, 50? Children, the sick, the elderly, everyone. The Indians, at the time, didn't see the Puritans as having stolen anything. There wouldn't be a Thanksgiving if that were the case. It would have been a massacre rather than, and the European settlers were in a very vulnerable position early on. The minute you start looking into specific stories, settlements, leaders, a very complicated picture arises. But the oversimplification of historical events is very common. The majority of the problems, let's say, around the time of America's founding, revolved around Indians raiding settlements. From the era of the Pilgrims to, let's say, the foundation of the American Constitution, came from wars where Indians, frustrated and angry that their ancestors had sold land to the early settlers, took action against them. Most treaties were broken by the Indians, not settlers, at least up until the constitutional era. 19th century, of course, was a very different story. Since so many Indian tribes sided with the Confederacy in the Civil War, the five civilized tribes who were big slave owners, all treaties with them were completely broken. Just that's inherent to warfare. 17th and 18th centuries was a completely different story. Of course, the simplification of the university courses has to be answered. Many years ago, I thought I was unique in having the argument that how can you steal land from a group of people who didn't have a concept of private property? They had a concept of use, but not necessarily ownership, and certainly it had not been raised to a theoretical level. And actually, as this is going on, the early settlements, you have a revolution happening in Western Europe. A destructive one, but a revolution nonetheless. Of course, the colonists did have a conception of private property. There was no conception of ownership, hence there's no conception of theft. This complication of the Indian culture at the time, it's a warrior one. That's how they functioned, for the most part. And especially when the Plains Indians were, you know, when that began, it's mostly a 19th century phenomenon. Too many first-hand accounts talk about the Indian expertise and things like torture. That was seen as barbaric by Europeans. All kinds of actually very well-thought-out forms of torture and very nasty forms of execution. Clearly, the concept of this deliberately spreading disease is a lie. You didn't even have the whole germ concept, germ theory of disease pathology did not exist. Hence, they couldn't have been using any kind of germ warfare. Any germ warfare used against the American Indians would automatically be used against themselves. According to the regime, it was unintentional when Europeans spread diseases to each other, but very much intentional when it came to diseases spreading amongst the Indians. Dixon also, I should note, is where I got the concept that syphilis, it was not a European disease. Dixon also notes that this whole germ warfare thesis comes from one source. In fact, it's one sentence in a private letter written by a white man in a fort under siege. This is prior to the writing of the Constitution. It's clearly an expression of frustration. We have to get rid of these people because we know what they're going to do if they break in here. The weapons that the Indians used against whites came from whites. But the fact that, you know, to claim that the Indians were so ignorant as to not be able to negotiate is a lie. Or that they were so peaceful that they couldn't fight back, also a lie. The only problem is they needed better weaponry. The American Indians were getting smallpox for some time. And one of the ways they got it was by robbing white people, raiding settlements where the carriers of the disease existed. Many Indians already had it. Using this kind of germ warfare is nonsensical. Who would handle it? How long do these microbes last out in the open? There was absolutely no policy like this. Ward Churchill invented the entire thing. In fact, the claim, and in Ward Churchill's old book, many of you are aware of it, claimed at a very specific fort this blanket policy was hatched. And in fact, in reality, there's not a fort within 800 miles of this location. He simply invented the whole thing. And like so many regime writers, pretty much assumes that no one's going to bother to look it up. Of course, smallpox can't last very long outside of a host body. And what kind of Indian is going to accept, you know, pus-covered blankets anyway? That one sentence about that is all they have, and it comes from an exhausted and very, very upset soldier. I don't know if he was a soldier or a civilian. I think he was a soldier, doing everything he could to come up with ways to win this war. You know, the percentage of Indians in the American population since 1830 has remained very constant. Not to mention the simple fact that it's easy to paper over all the means whereby Europeans kept certain tribes from completely dying out. Early on, there was a problem with falling populations. The nature of the reservations is that they could never be sold to anybody. They couldn't be taken away under any circumstances, hence the name. The increase in population in recent years, though, has a completely different foundation. You know, people having, you know, 1/4, 1/24, 1/5, 1/9 American Indian, and then demand all of the benefits of being non-white. If you include mixed race people, you have tens of millions of people claiming very close Indian ancestry. Huge sums of money were spent, which was also, you know, the part of the conversion idea amongst the Protestants early on. There's a reason that their population was so small when Europeans found them. The regime makes up numbers all the time. Could be the Holocaust or the American settlers. The claim is that something like 90% of the Indians died in the wake of the arrival. Of course, the Indians didn't have any kind of census. They didn't know what their population was. They were primitive. They were illiterate. They were ignorant, in contradistinction to, of course, the empires in the South. There is no way to tell how many were there to begin with. Contemporary reports talk about how few of them there are, and they didn't have an economy that was really capable of sustaining them. The consensus point of view is that pre-Columbian American Indians numbered maybe 400,000, 500,000. I mean, these are extremely primitive conditions. The number went up to 1.2 million in 1928 by James Mooney, who was part of the Smithsonian Institution, but it's somewhere in there. We don't know if Mooney is correct. The earlier estimate comes from 1894 from the Census Bureau. So whoever has the highest number of living Indians at the time of first settlement is one that's considered correct by the leftists. It was Henry Dobbins, one of the 60s leftists, who said without proof whatsoever that 95% of the native population died from European diseases, which would have been, as Dixon says, it would have been an astonishing mortality rate for any disease. And because of that assumption that 95% of the Indians were killed, that automatically means that the pre-Columbian Indian population had to be like 15 million. And that's where this number came from. It's simple circular reasoning. The concept that whites are a bacteria, a virus that can get injected somewhere, is made very manifest by these kind of statements. And of course, the Indians had very little by way of medicine, at least medicine that mattered. I've said many times before that these people, regime leftist writers, don't have access to a huge amount of information due to the nature of censorship. But if the earlier estimates of 500,000 were are correct, then you don't have a huge population loss afterwards. And no one's going to question this because no one wants to lose their job. I think the lowest estimate is about 100,000. And that was for pre-Columbian, southern part of North America and Central America. And these were, you know, this was a land of the empires, and including, you know, the northern part of South America. We know what the regime says. And by the way, another excellent book I want to note, Jeff Flynn Paul's Not Stolen, The Truth About European Colonialism in the New World. It's published by Bombardier Books and is really worth your time. And trying to be as scientific as possible, he holds that the most advanced empires in the New World were about 5,000 years behind Europe in terms of scientific understanding. Now, I don't believe in progress. I don't believe in any of this. So this is a kind of a weak argument for me. But it only matters in the sense of trying to figure out what the motivations of the Europeans were, especially the Spanish. Yeah, they had a pictographic alphabet system. The Aztecs did. But the hunter-gatherers were far more primitive than that. And the only contact between the surrounding tribes and the Aztec Empire itself were slave raids. But Indian tribes, no matter where they might be found, were constantly at war with one another. In fact, at the time, when the dictionaries of the Indian languages were put together, their words for their enemies were far worse than anything that the Europeans had. Being unhuman, inhuman, not human, was very common. Their word for demon, those who are worthy of extermination. These were not uncommon. They lived in a world that was very tribal and very much based on the warrior ethos. They never, under any circumstances, identified with each other racially. There is no such thing as a Native American. These are very different groups of people. The 20,000 human beings a year sacrificed with the Aztecs, that's been confirmed many, many times. The simple number of skulls maintained by this empire. The Natchez Indians of Mississippi did practice one form of child sacrifice. And this book also confirms the Indian concern with torture. They were very enthusiastic about the whole thing. Eyewitness accounts of Indian torture sessions are preserved. They've survived over the centuries. And this is to say nothing about the corpses of Europeans that have been found that are 5,000 years old. And that's a completely separate issue. Remember, Bill Clinton ordered that one to be destroyed. And it has nothing to do with the Indians themselves. They aren't heavily involved in American politics. It's what the left can do with them. The entire thing is dishonest. Please celebrate Thanksgiving. Celebrate it bereft of the trendy ideology of self-hatred. And please, whatever you do, don't pretend to be an Indian. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.